Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Good morning, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
How
what a
are
great
you?
Day.
Did you have a nice Memorial Day weekend?
We had family together. We went to the cemeteries. We had a barbecue last night, and just it was a nice weekend.
Sounds almost comparable to what we did.
Yeah. Just a nice weekend.
You know, the weekend was nice for the barbecues and the family gatherings and everything, but it takes a little time to remember and really remember the real meaning of Memorial Day. And I understand exactly. That you have something you'd like to share with us.
I do. You know, last year I was reading a book by about Ernie Pyle, who was a World War II war correspondent.
Yes, yes.
And Ernie Pyle was one of the most well-read and respected war correspondents in World War II. And after I read the account that he gave of the death of a guy by the name of Captain Waskow, and when these fellows would die, they would lay them next to this stone wall. And so I just kind of had this come to me, so I'd like to do this, and this is dedicated to all those in all the wars that have served, that preserved our freedom.
Right.
So it's called the Stone Wall. The men arose, prepared for the day, a day like so many others. Rifles, helmets, and all the gear, a bond like so many brothers. Orders came down the line, orders for soldiers to obey, wondering what the day would bring. Home folks praying day after day. From a ship, a bomber, in a tank, or those with boots on the ground, they are the greatest generation. No braver men to be found. They volunteered, willing to serve with mud, blood, courage, and fear, forever hoping war would end, never knowing if death was near. Captain Waskow's body lay quiet and still in the shadow of the stone wall. A true leader, loved by his men, why did this man have to fall? His men gazed at the lifeless form. Questions, no answers, but why? Willing to fight for family and country, and yes, even willing to die. Peace would come in the end, the cost so many gave their all. Let's remember those who didn't return, those neath the shadow of the stone wall.
Wow. Wow, what can you say?
And I'm just going to leave that with you.
Oh, can I have? I appreciate that. I really do appreciate
that. I just hope that, you know, in a lot of countries around the world, there are people who fought for a cause. And I think we need to acknowledge the bravery throughout the world, really.
The bravery and the commitment and the families that were involved
exactly.
in that bravery and commitment. It wasn't just the soldier.
Right.
It was the families also.
It was.
That was nice. Thank you very much.
So now we're going to head right into a story.
Now, I'm a little hesitant because I had a couple of calls after last week's program.
No food.
Are you
going?
No food today.
No food today. In fact, I'm going to step out on a limb here a little bit and say I'm going to bet nobody has heard of this person.
Okay, go
right?
ahead.
But I'll be, you know, if somebody has, let me know. Okay, the story is called Florida's Pocahontas.
Wait a minute. Florida's Pocahontas.
Pocahontas. And you'll see as we go along.
Okay.
So it was on or about August 27th, 1818, and Florida at that time was hot and humid. And
some things never change.
Yeah. And there was a group of 188 kind of bedraggled Indians, mostly women and children, starving. They shuffled silently into Fort Gadsden near the mouth of the
Do you want to try that one again?
In the mouth of the Apalachicola River. And I don't know if that's even close.
Why don't you just call it a river?
The river, that's okay. Anyway, this is on Florida's Gulf Coast. They surrendered themselves to the fort's commander, a Colonel Matthew Arbuckle. Among them were the recent widow and two daughters of a guy by the name of the Prophet Francis. And I'll explain that. The younger daughter, 15-year-old Millie, or Malie as she was known, was a strikingly beautiful and was well known to the whites for having saved the life of one of their soldiers. Okay. Now, nearly overwhelmed by their numbers and their sorry condition, Colonel Arbuckle did all in his power to tend to their immediate needs, providing food, water, medicine, a place for them to rest. He also sent word to the soldier that Melly had saved, and his name was Private Duncan McCrimmon, who had been returned to his home in Georgia. Now, while Melly, and we would call her Millie, but her Indian name was Mali, and that's what I'm going to use.
Okay.
So just a young girl. But anyway, while Mali and the group rested, regaining their strength, the young soldier made his way to Fort Gadsden, carrying donations from citizens who were eager to show their appreciation for Mali's efforts on McCrimmon's behalf. Remembering how she had interceded for him at the risk of her own life, Private McCrimmon presented her with the gifts and actually asked her to be his wife. Now, Malie gratefully accepted the donations, which she shared with the other Indians, but she gracefully declined the offer of marriage. And she basically said, you know, I didn't save you for that. I didn't save you so that you would marry me. And anyway, Colonel Arbuckle reported that Malie said she saved McCrimmon's life basically from feelings of humanity alone, and that she would have rendered the same service to any other white man under the same circumstances. And she was therefore not really disposed or interested in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, already in her young life, she'd been witness to a lot of pretty cruel acts on both sides of, you know, the whites and the Indians. So she was not naive. She knew what happened.
By the way, how old was she at
this
point?
15 right now. Yeah. So, but she was born in 1803, the youngest daughter of a guy known in English as the Prophet Francis, or Josiah Francis. So I'm going to call him Chief Francis for the sake of the story. And that's her father.
Yeah.
And he was a prominent Creek chief who was the offspring of an English man and a Creek woman.
Oh.
Okay. Now, Malie's mother was the only family member who did not speak in English. She was Indian, as I mentioned. Since most Indian girls received little education except from their mothers, Chief Francis must have taken it upon himself to instruct his children in English. So she learned English as well as the Indian language.
I see.
Now, confusion kind of abounded among whites with regard to Indian names. Girls usually kept the same name they were given at birth, but not so with the boys. Now, at birth, a boy was given his baby name, such as like Little Cub or whatever, and then another name when he reached warrior age and completed a dangerous deed, and sometimes actually a third name after he completed something, a daring act during battle or something like that. So the boys had at least two and sometimes three names.
I didn't know that.
So, but as I said further,
my dad had a lot of names for me.
I bet he did. But you know, further, as the males achieved other goals, actually still more names could be added. Now, as I mentioned, her father was Chief Francis, and he was a medicine man, and the whites frequently called him the Prophet. So that's where they come in with the Prophet or Chief Francis. But as I said, warriors often had second names, and the white men kind of muddled things even further by phonetically writing Indians' names, which they heard through the white man's language. So Millie became Millie.
Millie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because that's more what you would hear. So here we are, the early 1800s. Spain, Britain, and America battled each other and the Indians for control of Florida. Now, while the outbreak of the War of 1812, her father, Chief Francis, who then lived with his family near the Chattahoochee River in what is now Alabama, was enlisted by a friend to join the English. So he joined the British cause. So he was known to have...
In fighting against the United States.
Right, yeah. So he was enlisted by a friend to join the English. He was known to have assisted the British against Andrew Jackson and the Americans.
Wow.
So But, you know, at that stage, what do you do? Which side do you really go with? You know, that'd be hard to know. So in 1813, 1814, Chief Francis took his family south, establishing a new Seminole village in Spanish Florida, south of Tallahassee, near Fort St. Mark's. And I'm not familiar with that place.
I think I know vaguely where you mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now it's 1816. Chief Francis, accompanied by a British officer, embarked on a trip to England, where, in recognition of his assistant, he was received with great ceremony by Prince Regent George IV. He was commissioned, actually, a brigadier general. Okay, now here's an Indian chief. Commissioned a brigadier general in the British Army.
Okay, now this is after the War of 1812.
Right. Yeah, this is 1816.
And his allegiance was still
with
the British.
Yeah, yeah. And he actually got an elaborate uniform of red and gold. They gave him 325 British pounds, which was a lot of money, and a tomahawk mounted in gold. They had a big, huge dance in his honor aboard a Russian ship anchored nearby. Trumpets heralded his arrival, according to London newspapers. But interestingly enough, Francis, Chief Francis, never really tried to help England after that. And I don't know if he just kind of had a change of heart after being there. But when he came home,
he did sail back to this country.
Right, yeah. He sailed home determined to live in peace with the white men. So he, like I say, he helped the British, but then he kind of said, you know, okay, we're done with that.
Yeah.
Well, upon her father's return from England in June of, now we're 1817, Millie received many presents of dresses and shoes and bonnets that he brought back from England. Now, at that time, hostilities were kind of escalating among the Americans, the Spaniards, the British, and the Indians, resulting in another invasion by Andrew Jackson's army in 1818. Now, entering Florida near the mouth of the Chattahoochee River, Jackson continued to a place called Fort Gadsden. Now, while his army was at rest, this Private Duncan McCrimmon, okay, he's the guy, and you'll see what I'm going to say here. He was attached to General Jackson's army. He went fishing early one morning. He got confused trying to get back to his camp and was lost for several days. He was wandering about trying to find his way home when he was spotted by a party of unfriendly Indians. They overpowered him, took him to the town of where Chief Francis was, Millie's father. Okay, so have you got the picture here?
Kind of. Okay. Now, these are Seminole Indians, right?
Yeah. Okay. And so they captured this Private McCrimmon, took him to the camp where Millie's father was chief.
Right.
Now, Francis actually appeared in a splendid uniform, this nice British uniform that he had on.
All right.
And he had some pistols in his belt. He displayed his British commission to the prisoner. He then allowed the captors to interrogate McCrimmon, who eventually gave them the information they wanted regarding the strength and location of the American forces.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So they were still kind of not really for the Americans yet. They were still kind of siding with the British. Well, that done, they decided that it was time to sacrifice McCrimmon. So McCrimmon was stripped and his face was blackened with soot before he was tied to a stake. War cries commenced, which, of course, scared the heck out of this young man.
Oh, no, wait. Scared the heck out of. No, I think it goes deeper than that.
Well, he was terrified.
Okay.
Now, Millie and her sister, they were playing on the riverbank near their home and immediately understood the significance of what they heard, and they hurried in the direction of the sounds. Now, seeing the terrified young man, who was really not much older than Millie was, so he's probably only 18, 19 maybe, and she was about 15 or 16, so they stopped and they saw that he was tied to a tree, helpless, while two warriors danced around him with rifles ready to shoot, and everybody was kind of looking on and just watching what was happening. Well, Millie, she was kind of overcome with sadness, and she remained silent for a little while, and she didn't feel like she could participate in the excitement or the merriment that was going on.
Merriment?
Yeah. I mean, this was an enemy. Okay. So anyway, it was their right, the guys who had captured him, she knew, for it was accepted that if an Indian caught a white person, he had that life in his power and could not be interfered with, not even by the chief. Now, seeing the terror on the young prisoner's face, Malie went to her father, the chief, begging him, saying, you know, can't you do something? And she knew that he was helpless. He couldn't do anything to help. And he says, well, you just go talk to the captors. Go talk to the guys that it's their right to kill him. So she went back to the warriors, and she begged them to stop, saying...
They're dancing all this time?
Yeah. And so she went to them saying, you know, he's just a boy. One of the warriors became so mad, telling her that he had actually lost two sisters in the war with the white men. So he was pretty much wanted to kill this the guy. So anyway, she was unwilling to give up, and she kept on pleading and reminding that killing the prisoner wouldn't bring his sisters back, and the warriors were still unmoved. They were still bent on killing McCrimmon. Well, when all seemed lost, the captors were ready to terminate forever the mortal existence of the unfortunate McCrimmon. Malie placed herself between the captive and death, telling to the astonished executioners, if he thirsted for blood so bad, to kill her. Now, that goes right back to Pocahontas, you remember, and Smith.
Well, Malie didn't graduate at the top of her class.
She was a very compassionate woman.
Yes.
Well, anyway, the two warriors finally relented.
Are you kidding me?
They agreed to let McCrimmon live if he would consent to have his head shaved and not try to escape.
What's the head shaving?
I don't know. Shave his head. So
is it an embarrassment?
No. I think it was so that he would be part of the tribe. So without hesitation, obviously, McCrimmon agreed. His head was shaved except for a little scalp lock. So I assume that was just a little part on top.
The Indians, I'm trying to think of the tribe. It wasn't the Iroquois. Yeah, it was the Iroquois. They used to have that little top notch.
Yeah. And so he had this little scalp lock. They adorned it with feathers. They painted him, dressed him in their style, and they considered him now adopted into the tribe.
So he didn't go back to the army.
Well, wait. Here we go. Malie showed McCrimmon kindness for the next several days before he was actually taken away to Fort St. Mark's, where there was a ransom negotiated. And he didn't try to escape, but he was ransomed for 7.5 gallons of rum and permitted to rejoin the army. So
for 7.5 gallons of rum,
this guy was set free.
He was set free.
Yeah.
Did he cut off the top notch?
I don't know. So President Jackson's army. Okay, now he's an American. All right. So here we are. There were two ships that were sent to act as reinforcement for the Americans. They made their way up the Appalachian River, where they anchored. And this, okay, two American ships flying British flags.
Whoa.
Okay. They were doing that to conceal their identity. All right. Now, stay with me here.
I am.
The newly freed McCrimmon knew they were American, not British. But he rode out and actually got on the ship. Now, since British flags were flying, Chief Francis thought, okay, these are British. These are my friends. He and another chief rode out to visit what they thought was a friendly ship. The captain welcomed them on board, invited them to his cabin for something to eat. As they followed him, several Americans emerged from hiding, rushed towards the two chiefs, and captured them. All right? So now here's two chiefs, Malie's father, on an American ship that he thought was British.
The plot thickens.
It does. Now, when McCrimmon appeared, Chief Francis reminded him of how his life had been spared such a short time before by his daughter.
Yeah.
And McCrimmon said, you didn't save my life. Your daughter did. I don't owe you anything. So that's not sitting too well. All right. So that afternoon, Malie actually was seen paddling around the ship, apparently trying to find her father. Suddenly, shots fired from the ship. She grabbed a rifle. She hid in the bottom of the canoe and returned fire, and then she went back to shore. So she knew something was not good.
Well, yeah, when somebody's shooting at you.
So anyway, McCrimmon's efforts to saving the lives of the two chiefs was fruitless. Andrew Jackson arrived the next morning, received a report of what was going on. So now Chief Francis was in Jackson's power, still wearing this British uniform that he had.
Okay, but now the chief thought they were on British ships. When did they take down the British flags and let everybody
know?
Well,
as soon as they got on, they let him know, hey, you're our prisoners now.
You are confusing.
I'm trying to keep this straight. Okay, so, and unfortunately, at this point, they hung both chiefs.
I see.
Chief Malie's father, Chief Francis,
right.
And the other chief.
Okay.
Well, so things were not good now between anybody. And I know we're about out of time.
A little testy, yeah.
I know. Anyway, after Chief Francis' death, conditions in the village continued to decline. Shortly after the mass surrender at Fort Gadsden, his family joined other Seminoles on a long journey out to Oklahoma Territory for resettlement. Years passed during which there was no recorded account of Malie's exact whereabouts. We only know that she survived the journey to get out from Florida to Oklahoma, which, as we know, they were always given the worst ground,
yeah.
You know. But on their way to Oklahoma Territory, Malie's tribe had to compete with other tribes for resources, Indian agents hired by the government. You know, they didn't treat them right. Actually, they got to the point where President John Taylor sent a guy by the name of Hitchcock, a colonel, to see what was going on. And as he got out there and he saw that things were not good for the Indians, he, on their behalf, started getting food, clothing, and taking care of them the way they had been promised. So he actually did help them. Well, as things went on, Malie actually finally came to the end of her life. She died in 1848. And, you know, again,
she died a young woman.
She did.
Yeah.
You know, she's about 45, yeah, 40,
about
right
45
in there.
Right in there.
But she didn't recover. She died. And so Florida's Pocahontas died in 1848 and was buried somewhere, they say, between the city of Muskogee and the banks of the Arkansas River. And actually, the government had actually, as I said, tried to help. They actually promised her a pension and a medal, but she died without ever getting any of the pension that they had promised.
Whatever happened to the soldier that went on a fishing trip that about got him shot?
That's a good question. Yeah. He no longer shows up in the story.
Really, no more.
Well, you know, okay. I mean, your potential father-in-law, you stood by and let him get hung.
Yeah.
You know, so.
There's things that need to be said there, but I don't think I'm going to say it.
So,
wow.
You know, Malie was a brave young woman who dared to challenge warriors and the chief to save a young man's life, and it wasn't because who he was.
And there was no reciprocity later.
No.
Yeah.
But, like I say, she did what she needed to do. She ended up out in Oklahoma. On a reservation that was nowhere near as
How much do you trust the documentation on these kinds of stories?
You know, to me, when I can get a journal, a diary, or something like that, that is the most reliable. So this is a book that I hope is accurate, and I believe that it is. I mean, they have footnotes of where they got the information.
Yeah.
So I try to keep these stories as historically accurate as possible.
Mm.
So, but again, we're looking at one author's version of this whole story.
Wow.
So
she was the Seminole Indian Pocahontas.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah, Florida's Pocahontas.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Dr. History, thank you.
You bet.
Excellent job this morning. And that poem you did was phenomenal.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I know, we got about 30 seconds left here, that you, always being so organized, you have everything all set up for next week's program.
I do. It's sitting at home in my library, just waiting to be opened.
That's a cop out.
Just waiting to see.
No, very interesting. And can you give us a clue as to what you're not going to go into more food, are you?
No, we're done with that for a while.
Believe me, we're done with the food for a while. Yeah, thank you. But very interesting. Thank you.
Well, again, this is a time to remember things of the past.
Absolutely.
The people that served. And I don't think there's... I'm going to bet there's a lot of families living right now that have uncles, grandparents, great uncles, aunts that were involved.
A lot of stories.
Yes.
A lot of stories.
Yes.
Dr. History, Dr. Ken Turner, one of my dearest friends, thank you so much, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid. High amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.